Today, we're going through Mark. I was out in Sunday school last week, so I didn't hear the message, but I heard it was good. And it was Mark chapter 2. Today, we're in Mark chapter 3. So we're going to head through that and see what's going on there. And hopefully, God will speak to all of us, including myself, because this is a message for me, as well as everyone here this morning. So we're going to start off in Mark chapter 3, verse 1. And just before that, in chapter 2, Jesus had been going through with his disciples, picking some grains, and the religious leaders had a bit of a go at him for doing that on the Sabbath, but upset about that. And straight from there into chapter 3, another time, Jesus went into the synagogue. This is Mark chapter 3, verse 1, into the synagogue, and there was a man there with a shriveled up hand. And some of them were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, so they watched him closely to see if he would heal him on the Sabbath. And Jesus said to the man with the hand, "Mate, stand up here in front of everyone." So he brought him up front. And he looked around them. Jesus then asked them, "Which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or evil, to save a life or to kill?" But they remained silent. He looked around in anger, deeply distressed at their stubborn hearts. And he said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He stretched it out, and his hand was completely restored. Then the Pharisees went out and began to plot with the Herodians how they might kill Jesus. Now let's just stop right there. Let's just pretend we're in church today. Well, actually, you can probably, that's a reality, I think. We're all here. So just imagine someone here with a shriveled up hand. And here is Jesus here standing here. We're all looking at this. And Jesus says, "Stretch out your hand." And this guy with a shriveled up hand like this, who we know because he's part of our congregation, so we know who he is. And he's been there. And suddenly stretches out her hands, and the first thought we think is, that man has to die. We need to take Jesus out and mess him up. We need to take him out and kill him for that. It seems like we're crazy. It seems ridiculous. And yet these Pharisees here, their hearts were so hardened towards God that here they were, they saw this amazing thing. If I was there sitting there, I'd be thinking, wow, look at that. Old mate with a shriveled up hand, suddenly he can use his hand. Now he can go do some work and do some stuff, and it's just going to change his life. That's fantastic. God is in this place. Wow. And yet the religious leaders of the time wanted to kill him. What does it take for our hearts to become so hard that we could be in the position sitting here looking out and seeing God do some amazing thing in someone's life and setting people free and thinking, we've got to sort that rubbish out. We need to shut that down real fast. What could it take? You know, I know when I was much younger in my faith, I was very passionate about God, and you're going for God, and you're in youth group, and you're all excited about stuff, and you're going off to Easter camp and doing all this sort of stuff, and very zealous and passionate. And I have noticed in my life, as I'm getting older now, some of you will laugh at that, but I'm over 40 now, so I feel like I'm in midlife, but compared to some. And I do notice that sometimes I look back and think, is my heart as passionate as it once was as I was a teenager? Is my love for God as passionate now as it was back then? And to be brutally honest with you, I have to say that sometimes I have to say, no, it's not. My heart has become cynical, and sometimes it becomes hardened. And sometimes I have to ask myself, how did it come to this? What has happened in my life that's caused my heart to harden up a bit in some areas in the things of God? And what would it take for God to take my heart and to make it soft again? Because we're looking at here an extreme situation where we'd all probably think, man, that seems pretty crazy that the church leaders would want to take Jesus out and kill him for something that God was doing. And you know, I have to ask myself, probably all those Pharisees at some stage, their hearts were soft towards God. And something happened. And over time, something happened to make their hearts so hard that they wanted to take Jesus, the Son of God, who had just set someone free, and to crucify them. See, at the beginning of this chapter, we have this thing in the church here, or in the synagogue, where Jesus is rejected, and they want to kill him. And at the end of the chapter, we see his whole family think he's gone out of his mind, and they want to shut him down and take him away because he's embarrassing them, and that's really awkward. So in the church and in the family, both ends of the chapter, we see this thing of Jesus being rejected, not accepted, and hearts being hardened. And right in the middle there, we have this time where Jesus takes his disciples up the mountain, and he calls them, and they come with him, and he sends them out to do his work. And But on either end, we have this thing of rejection. And I have to ask myself the question, how hard is my heart? Do I need to look into my heart and see, God, what have I done in my heart? Is my heart as soft to you now as it was? I notice a couple of things here. You see, the Pharisees came in and they were looking intently for a reason to shut Jesus down. And I think in life, oftentimes, if we look, if our outlook on life is to look at things and try and find the negative, we will find them every single time. And they were here looking to try and catch Jesus out, to shut him down and to pounce on him. They loved rules much more than they loved people. Now, I find that for myself. I find it very easy to live under the law, much easier to live under the law than under grace, because under the law, I can look at the rules and say, tick, 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 I can do this, 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 and this. But you see, with grace, it goes much deeper than that. Grace doesn't have a set of rules that you can just tick off and follow and say, yep, done that, done that, done that, I'm okay. Rules are easier, I find, because I know where I stand with other people. I think oftentimes in life, we always compare ourselves. And obviously, the worst, you might compare yourself to Adolf Hitler. Nah, all good. Mother Teresa, probably the spectrum we've got generically in life. We could compare ourselves to Hitler and Mother Teresa. So long as I sort of end up towards the Mother Teresa end, obviously not that much because I'm not that amazing, but you know, then I'm doing okay. You see, what Jesus did often is he got right underneath all that, and he actually he brought the man up the front because he knew what their hearts were like, and he exposed the hardness of their hearts. He didn't try and do it in secret. And you might say, well, Jesus, you know, why don't you just heal him on the Monday? Why do it today? Why not? Why ruffle feathers? Because what he was doing is saying, hey, people, your hearts have become hardened, and I want to show you what the real heart of love is. You see, God's heart is to set people free. God's heart is to set people free. And the people and the Pharisees became so concerned with the rules that they missed out on the heart of what God's heart was in the situation. There's a passage in the Old Testament that says, do not boil a goat in its mother's milk. Try and preach a sermon on that for, if you're working through Leviticus. Do not boil a goat in its mother's milk. Now, other than that just being kind of disturbing and weird, that you'd want to do that, this is the sort of thing that happened in the religious time, is that they would take something like that and think, now, the reason probably why they had this little thing in Leviticus was pretty much there's probably some sort of fertility ritual or something like that around the pagan nations, and so that was part of the deal with the people of God. So just don't do that. Just don't even go there. God's heart for that, it's like, man, look to me for everything you need. Don't go chasing off under superstitious and all that stuff. Don't do that sort of thing. So let's not do that. But then, of course, the people would come around that and say, wow, don't boil a goat in its mother's milk. Well, what if you had some goat meat and you had some goat milk and you weren't sure whether it was, you know, related? So let's make another rule around that and say, let's not boil goat meat with milk. And then you might say, well, what if you had some meat and you weren't sure whether it was a goat or something else? You know, it could be a cow, a goat, they probably look the same, all red and nasty. And then you've got some milk here and you're not sure. So let's just make a rule, you don't boil any meat in milk. Well, what about if you are just doing some cooking in the same area, you know, in the same kitchen, and it happened to be some milk and there happened to be some meat and they happened to come together and there was some type of chemistry go on there and there was some cooking involved and it could have been this. Well, let's separate, let's not cook dairy and let's keep these things complete. And you can see how this thing, and this is what happened, rule upon rule, and suddenly rules got put in place and you come right back and you totally miss and you think you're doing God's will by, oh, I'm going to keep that meat and milk separate, and you totally miss the point. You totally miss the point by getting so caught up in the things. I remember doing missions work with an organization, and I went overseas a lot of times with teenagers, and we'd do some trips overseas and do some projects and stuff like that. And there was a lot of rules, as you can imagine, around taking a group of teenagers overseas. And, you know, and it has to be rules. When you're taking a bunch of 30 teenagers overseas to a different country, you have to have some rules in place. But I've done this quite a few times, but what happened as I went on and on in this ministry is I got so fixated on the rules that I forgot about the heart of why we were there that was for the heart of for the teenagers, that God loved these teenagers. And I got so fixated on keeping the rules and keeping them all safe in this that I forgot the heart of why the rules were there. The rules were there out of love. Love for the kids, love for the parents, love for the people we were going to. The rules were there out of love, and I totally missed the point because I was so fixated on the actual keeping the rules themselves that I missed the whole point of why we were there. And so my heart became calloused and hardened, and I was just more focused on getting a job done, a task done, and missing the whole point. In ministry, we can do the same thing. In church life, we can do the same thing. And I have to ask, how is my heart? Has it become hardened? Have I started to focus on the rules rather than the heart of why things were there? See, when there's a hardness of heart, there can be less love. There can be less vulnerability because our hearts start to become hardened. We start to feel self-righteous, or we start to compare. Our hearts start to harden. We focus more on rules and things in place like that rather than the hearts of people. Sometimes we can have known sin in our life and a lifestyle or allowing things to stay there that we know are not right. And our heart starts to harden. Sometimes we focus more on service, serving God. I find it much easier to serve God than it is sometimes to love his people. In reality, sometimes it's easier to get busy serving God than it is to love people. Because serving God, you can do that, and you can tick the box, and you can be busy, and you can look like you're being busy in the kingdom of God. But maybe Jesus needs to come and expose my heart and say, Andrew, you're busy doing that, mate, but you're actually missing the point. You're missing the point of my heart. You're missing the point of freedom. Fear. Fear can come in our lives and harden our hearts. Fear of so many things. Sometimes our hearts start to harden because we're trying to protect them. Because we've been hurt in the past. Because, here we go. Right there. Get into gear. All right. Shake it off. All right. Here we go. Sometimes to trust God, when we've given our hearts to God, to trust that God will hold our hearts, and we think, well, maybe he won't. Maybe God won't. Maybe God can't be trusted because in the past, X has happened or Y has happened or Z has happened, and because of all that, it's hard to trust God. God, would you do you really love me that much? Is your heart really for me? Because there's a few times, God, well, I think I probably would have done things a bit differently to you, God. I don't know if I would have let things play out in the same way. And sometimes our hearts can start to become calloused and hardened towards the things of God because we find it hard to trust, because we fear letting go. If I really let go, if I really became vulnerable, if I really gave my heart, God, I don't know if I could trust you with that. And out of a place of fear of what could happen, we harden our hearts. The two greatest commandments that Jesus gave, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. So if you can keep these two commandments, awesome. Good job. Good job. God, do I love you with all my heart? Do I hold anything back in my heart? Do I love people like you love people? Do I really love people? Not just talking about an outward appearance of love. Deep down in my heart, God, do you need to expose something in my heart? I remember listening to a sermon once as a youth group. We went to listen to this guy preach in some event. And I remember listening to it and being quite analytical and critical about the sermon, thinking that wasn't that flash. But at the end of the sermon, a whole bunch of people came forward and gave their lives to Christ for the first time. I remember scratching my head thinking, what? How did that happen? How did they get a response out of that? See, I missed the whole point. My heart was hard. I started focusing on stuff that was irrelevant when I should have been looking like, wow, God did something in the hearts of people. People are being set free. People are being released. People are connecting with God. And yet my heart was hard because I was so focused on stuff that was irrelevant. Sure, it might not have been at the extent of the Pharisees wanting to take Jesus out and kill him. But again, it exposes the heart. And this is what Jesus did time and time again, as he exposed the heart of the people around him to show, hey, you're missing the point. You're missing what's going on in the situation. Or maybe it's that worship leader. Maybe it's that worship, oh, I chose that flipping song again. Seriously, I can't get into worship with that worship leader. Really? I mean, seriously, we're missing the point. We're missing the point of why we do what we do is to connect with God. It's not the worship leader. It's up to us to connect with God. It's up to us. It exposes our hardness of heart where we think we can, oh, it's this person or that person or this or that. And sometimes God says, hey, Andrew, let me have a look at your heart and see how hard your heart is. Let me look and see what's going on there. Let's deal with that. You see, what happened is Jesus went from this place with this man with a shriveled hand who's just been set free and transformed his life. And he went out with the disciples further on and they were afraid that he would be crushed. And some translations says they were afraid he would be crushed. Just imagine being a person and you actually are putting like risk management in place to stop you from actually being crushed by the crowd. So they got him on a boat and the people cornered towards him. You know, he was rejected at the synagogue, but out here in the open, the people came and they listened and they wanted to be healed. They heard about this grace. So a bit of a novelty situation out by the lake, all flocking around him. But then he went from there up a mountain. Do you want to fire up that picture? Now, this is very, this here, the man on top of the mountain didn't fall there. Vince Lombardi, I didn't know who he was, but apparently he's some famous NFL, some American football coach or something. Excuse my ignorance. Now this here was found in a very significant location. It was also we do men's shoes underneath. There's a phone number there. It's an 06 number. That's actually found in the Gisborne toilets in the airport, above the urinal. So sorry, ladies, you probably won't be able to physically go and watch that look of that. But that's where I found it. The man on top of the mountain didn't fall there, and I find it interesting here that the crowds came massing towards Jesus down by the lake. But and he withdrew up the mountain. And oftentimes when you go to some of the hard places, people start dropping off pretty quick. And it doesn't say anything about the crowds being up the mountain. But down by the lake, yeah, they were all there. But up the mountain, we had to go up to be with Jesus. The crowds doesn't say anything about the crowds being there. And Jesus went up the mountain and he called the disciples to him and they came. Sometimes I think we need to move ourselves away from the crowds. We need to move ourselves away from the busyness of life. We need to come to Jesus and to go where he is and to take that time. And sometimes going up the mountain, it takes effort. You know, you got to walk uphill. You got to make time out of our crazy schedules and busy days to actually get with Jesus and to be with him, to go, to listen to his voice. He called and the disciples came and they went to him up the mountain, away from the crowds, away from the novelty stuff, away from the critics, away from everything, and they withdrew and went up the mountain. They didn't just happen to be there, they went up there, deliberately up there, and Jesus called and the disciples came. Am I listening to the voice of God? Am I listening to the voice of Jesus calling me to come and spend time with him? Because you see, sometimes it's easy to say, oh yeah, no, we need to spend time with God, but do we really spend time with God? Do I really make that effort to spend time with God? Because it's in those times our heart starts to soften. It's in those times when we're just with me and Jesus that our hearts start to soften and being with him in that environment. But if we don't, if we don't hang out with Jesus, it's so hard, easy for our hearts to start to harden up. And here we got a whole list of disciples there that he called, the 12. And at the end of that, it says, and Judas the Iscariot, who betrayed him. Has anyone wondered why Jesus chose Judas to be part of his 12? Anyone wondered that? Come on. Surely someone. Is a nod, Chris? Do I get a nod? Thank you. Thank you, mate. We're tight, mate. Thank you very much. Thanks for agreeing. I have. I've wondered why Jesus chose. Was it just out of expediency to have someone who's going to be the scapegoat? This true as old Judas. So I believe Jesus knew he would betray him. Absolutely. But it doesn't mean that Jesus chose him to betray him. There's a big difference there. Jesus chose Judas. He loved Judas. He pulled him into his 12. He knew he would betray him, but Jesus didn't choose him because he was going to betray him. He pulled him in. See, the question I ask when I say, wonder why Jesus chose Judas, the real question is, why did Jesus choose me? Why did Jesus choose me to follow him? And I think oftentimes I can think, oh, why did you do that? Why did Jesus do that? And Jesus turns the whole thing around on me and says, well, Andrew, why did I choose you? Because I love you. Why did I choose Judas? Because I loved him. He was part of my 12. Yes, he betrayed me. So did Peter. He denied Jesus 3 times. Have I denied Jesus? Yes, I have. Have I betrayed Jesus? Yes, I have. Let's not get on that spectrum of comparison between Hitler and Mother Teresa. and Judas and me somewhere. Let's focus on Jesus ourselves. Down from that time, so Jesus appointed these 12 to go out and to cast out demons and to spread God's word and all that sort of stuff. And he drew them in and they were with him. And even in that, Judas, part of his 12, his heart obviously, just meant he was with Jesus for 3 years. And yet even Judas's heart became hardened to such an extent that he would betray Jesus. Even Peter's heart became so hardened that even when he was asked to, you know, do you know this man? No, I don't know this man. So even if you're actually physically in Jesus' presence for 3 years, we're in threat of having a hardened heart, of having our heart become hard. So it's something we need to focus on. It's something that we need to continually say, God, soften my heart. Comes down from the mountain. Of course, in the book of Mark, we've got story after story, bang, 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 and the writer Mark just basically bangs a whole lot of stories all together. It's all very fast flowing. And so he comes down the mountain and he goes into the village, and it says he couldn't even eat because the crowds were just crushing on him. He couldn't even eat. So Mark is very much about the humanity of Jesus, man. He got on a boat because he's afraid of getting crushed by the people. He went into the house and he couldn't even eat anything. Good weight loss program right there. He couldn't even eat anything because the crowds were just coming at him. And his family heard about it, and I suspect they were horrendously embarrassed. They thought, he's gone nuts. Jesus has gone nuts. Let's go and grab him and sort of put him away somewhere and hide him somewhere because all this is just a bit crazy. And so they came to do just that. And in the meantime, the Pharisees are coming back and they're basically accusing Jesus of being like the prince of demons because he's casting out demons. All this sort of carry on going there. But his own family didn't accept him. His own family thought he was crazy. Family is a bit of a tricky thing because, you know, I grew up in a great family. No problems at all. But I realize that a lot of people don't grow up in a family that's supportive, that loves them, that loves God, that's a great place to be. And sometimes it can be really, really hard to have your faith in a family context like that, where you might have a spouse who doesn't believe in God at all. Very hard to be in that place where your faith in God and the very essence of who you want to be and loving Christ is not accepted, it's rejected. And what does Jesus do in this particular situation? Here he is teaching, and his family turn up outside. They don't even come in. They send someone else because they're too embarrassed about Jesus. It's just really, really awkward. And so they come outside and they say, send someone in, tell Jesus to come out here. And Jesus basically says, we'll just might as well go to there and read that. In verse 31. And Jesus' mother, brothers, and sisters, the translation infers, arrived. Because remember, of course, Mary had other kids as well. And they were standing outside. They sent someone in to call him. A crowd was sitting around him, and they told him, your mother, your brothers are outside looking for you. And Jesus says, where are my mother and my brothers? He said. And he looked at those seated in the circle around him. He says, these are my mother and my brothers. Whoever does God's will is my mother, my sister, and my brothers. You know, we talk about being part of the body of Christ, the family of Christ. And yet, sometimes we know family is messy. And sometimes family is dysfunctional. And Jesus is basically saying, in Christ, we are family. In Christ, we are family. And we need to be loving each other like a family. And so it's very hard to do that when you're in isolation. It's very hard to do that when you have a hardened heart. Because I know, if you remember, I fought with my brother and my sisters, all that sort of stuff. It's all there. But Jesus is saying, whoever is for me, whoever is with me, these are my family. We are the family of God. We are the people who love God. We are family. Let us not be a place, let us not be a church that makes people feel rejected. And I don't believe that for a minute. I'm not even saying that. I'm more internalizing it to myself. I don't want to be contributing to making people feel as if they don't belong or they don't fit or that they aren't part of what God's got going on there. God is saying to all of us this morning, how is your heart? Andrew, how is your heart? Is it hardened towards me? Is there something in my heart that is causing my heart to turn away from God? Maybe it is that known sin in my life I don't need to deal with. Maybe it's trusting God letting go of fear. You see, perfect love casts out fear. God is perfect love. When he comes into our hearts, he wants to dispel fear, get rid of that fear, to soften that heart down. Maybe you can look back and think, yep, I remember a time when my heart was soft towards God. I remember a time that my heart was really soft and open, and then something happened and my heart is calloused now. Or you recognize it's starting to harden up. I think this is a great call for all of us at all stages to keep an eye on that, because we could be Peter, we could be Judas, we could be anyone. And we can be walking in the very presence of God, and before you know it, our heart starts to harden up. Sure, you might not be in the point of the Pharisees wanting to crucify Jesus just for healing someone. That's crazy stuff. But it started somewhere, and it started moving along. Let's be people who say, God, here I am. Search my heart.